from San Francisco, California, with your host, Ben Kaspic. This is Locked On Giants Baseball. Welcome back to Locked On Giants Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Kaspic, and I'm thrilled to be with you again today. On the show, we provide daily episodes Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also simple and accessible to all. Coming up on today's show, we have quite a baseball game to talk about. The Giants losing 12-7 to the San Diego Padres in 10 innings. Giants were trailing in this game 6-1, came all the way back in the 7th and 8th innings, only to lose in frustrating fashion in 10 innings. So also in this game, there was a small and inconsequential mistake by Gabe Kapler going out to the mound to take out Tyler Rogers, but the pitching coach had just visited the mound, so Kapler was not allowed to take out the pitcher. It was really an inconsequential, relatively minor mistake, but yet I've seen, you know, a lot of writers for the Giants are making this a big deal. But we're not going to focus on that primarily. We'll get to it eventually, but I want to start with actually what I think was what were the bigger storylines in this game. So it was looking like for the second consecutive night, the Giants were going to erase a big deficit in the late innings and possibly come back and beat the Padres with offense. So that's what I want to really focus on. Donovan Solano and Mike Yastrzemski just continued to set the world on fire here in the 2020 season. And what's so exciting about it is that it's just a continuation of what these guys did last year. And by extension, it's praise for the new front office for finding players like this. So if you think I'm over-exaggerating, I'll point out that Mike Yastrzemski currently leads all of Major League Baseball position players in Fangraph's wins above replacement at 0.8. He's literally number one. AL, NL, doesn't matter. So he's hitting now .423 with a .531 on base percentage and an .808 slugging. Obviously not sustainable numbers. We can look at this line. We can see a .529 batting average on balls in play. It's easy to say no. Of course, that line is not going to last, but that's not how it works. I mean, what the fact that he's doing this alone is significant. This is what a hot streak looks like. Hot streaks are never sustainable, but something like the isolated power is not really susceptible to flukiness. Like if you're hitting for power, you're hitting for power. And it was a well above average .245 last year. And isolated power, by the way, is just slugging percentage minus batting average. And it literally just isolates your power production numbers. But this year so far, it's .385. So combined in his major league career now, Yastrzemski has a .254 isolated power. The league average is somewhere around .180 or .190. So also of note, he's walking a lot. He's walking like 19% of the time right now. Swung at ball four last night. It was a pitch that he's going to take 9 times out of 10. But he swung at ball four. It was way out of the zone. So he could have had another walk. But as it was, he walked twice and had a triple and a single in last night's game, including a huge triple in the 8th inning that scored a run and put himself on third as the tying run with nobody out. So coming into the season, projections for Mike Yastrzemski, we talked a lot about them all offseason. They had him still being slightly below average offensively. And the explanation I gave, and we even went through position player depth charts, position player power rankings, and I was saying I think that a lot of these guys could overperform those projections. And we're seeing that from Yastrzemski because the projections coming into the year were slightly below average. And I thought, you know, there's definitely a real chance if he does what he did last year, he's going to be above average, not below average. And we're already seeing that his brief performance, just 7 games in 2020, is already moving the needle on his projection. So if you look at Zips now, Zips is now projecting Yastrzemski to be 11% above average offensively for the rest of the year. So that's just going to continue to rise if he keeps playing well. It's not that he has to keep up this level, but if he keeps producing above that projection will keep moving up. And that's pretty typical for guys who just have random breakout performances. It doesn't just automatically buy into the performance. You have to sustain it for longer before the projections start to get dragged upwards to meet you where you are. And so all told now in his major league career, Yastrzemski has 443 plate appearances, and he's been 31% above average offensively, hitting .282 with a .348 on base and .537 slugging. Just really good offensive numbers, and it's just great. Great for him, and it's great for this Giants team, and it's looking like a feather in the cap of Farhan Zaidi, who traded for Yastrzemski in a minor deal, and this is the production that they're getting out of him. So like I said, the walk rate is way up and the strikeout rate is down. So these numbers haven't reached their stabilization point yet, and obviously a lot of the other numbers haven't either. But walk rate and strikeout rate are among the fastest things to stabilize. And so if he keeps walking, that's something to look out for. And if it keeps happening, we can safely say he's going to be a guy who walks more now. So already, I don't know exactly where the projections were ahead of the season, but he's already projected to walk 9.5% of the time, which is significantly higher than what he did in 2019. So the other guy to talk about is Donovan Solano. So the Padres had a tough righty on the mound. He really pitched well in this game. Dinelson Lamet, 5 innings, 7 strikeouts, did walk 4, but only 1 run allowed. And Donovan Solano coming into the year was projected to be more of a platoon player against left-handed pitching, but he's just done so well to start the season that by this point, just 7 games in, he was inserted into the lineup against a tough righty, hitting 3rd. It went Yastrzemski, Dickerson, Solano, and he did not disappoint. He ended up going 4-for-5 with 3 doubles in this game. So the legend of Mike Yastrzemski and the legend of Donovan Solano just continues here last night. So I mentioned that Yastrzemski was number 1 in Fangraph's wins above replacement among position players in all of MLB. Donovan Solano is 11th, even though he didn't start a few games and he has far fewer plate appearances than a lot of guys who are above him or even immediately below him on that list. So his projections as well have moved upwards from this hot start. He's still projected to be a below average offensive contributor, but they've definitely moved up from where they were to start the season. So in a Giants uniform, the 32-year-old Solano has hit .345 with a .369 on base and .489 slugging. So it's really clear to look at this batting average on balls in play that's .420 and see that it's not sustainable. He's not going to hit .345 because if you take points off the average on balls in play, it's just going to drop everything down by that many points, the average, the on base, and the slugging. But he is hitting for a lot more power than he did prior in his career. And he's also deserved a lot of the outcomes. If you look at the StatCast data and look at how hard is he hitting the ball? What launch angles is he hitting the ball at? He's deserved the success that he's had. So it's kind of a weird thing where you know he can't sustain the average on balls in play, but at the same time, he's hitting the ball really hard all the time. So it's just going to be fascinating to see how this plays out. I think he's definitely a guy who we should expect him to regress significantly, but I'm still fascinated to see how good he can be once that regression happens, because clearly something's going on with Donovan Solano. So yeah, basically these two guys combined had everything to do with the Giants coming back in this game. They tie it 6-6 late, but then lose big in extra innings. So coming up in the second half of the show, I'll talk about the start by Kevin Gausman, which was really interesting, and we'll also talk about what went wrong in the 10th inning and acknowledge the Kapler situation that has been blown out of proportion, not surprisingly. But first, I want to talk about CBDMD. It doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete, a stay-at-home parent, or you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair. Everyone needs support to make it through the day. Luckily, our friends at CBDMD have an amazing duo that can help you relax, regroup, and recharge when life gets chaotic. CBD Freeze with Menthol is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient and easy-to-use roller or a shareable squeeze tube. CBD Recover combines CBD with inflammation-fighting compounds like arnica and vitamin B6 to give you the support you need where it matters most. And to make it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else CBD MD has to offer, they're offering all our listeners here at Locked On Giants 25% off for your next order when you use promo code LOCKEDONMLB at checkout. Once again, that's CBDMD.com, promo code LOCKEDONMLB for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD oil products from CBDMD. Next, I want to talk about RockAuto.com. One reason that we repair and maintain our cars is to save money that we can then use for more important things like the mortgage or food. So why would you choose to spend 30, 50, 100% more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or new car dealership? Random example, a fuel pump assembly for a Honda Odyssey costs $353.99 at Advance, which is a big chain store, and just $216.79 at rockauto.com. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and reliably low. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Whether it's for your classic car or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Go to RockAuto.com now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. All right, now I want to talk about the rest of this game, the start by Kevin Gausman, and then address what happened in extra innings. Talk about how the Giants managed to give up 6 runs in the inning. And there was a mistake by Kapler, but honestly, I thought that there were definitely larger gripes. If you have a gripe with Kapler from this game, there was a lot more to chew on than the mistake that he made when the game was already out of hand. So Kevin Gausman got the start. It was another traditional start for the Giants. For those paying attention, those upset at all their unconventional ways, they've been pretty conventional for the most part, actually. So Kevin Gausman gets the start. He ends up going 4 1/3 with 8 strikeouts. He just had this one inning where he just was getting hit hard. But, you know, ultimately in the inning, there ended up being runners on 2nd and 3rd with no outs, and then he struck out 3 consecutive batters after getting hit around prior to that. So it was an up-and-down start for Gausman, but all the strikeouts and having no walks means that he's got some really interesting peripherals right now. So peripherals meaning basically numbers that are more predictive of future success than something like earned run average, which is not so predictive in a small sample. Gausman for the season now in 8 1/3 has a 5.40 earned run average. But because of the strikeout rate being high and because of the walk rate being really low, we're talking 27% strikeout rate, 2.7% walk rate. The peripherals are good. We're talking a fielding independent pitching of 2.60 and an expected fielding independent pitching of 2.77. So those numbers basically, I'm saying, are better at predicting future ERA than the 5.40 ERA. So, I mean, it seems a little wild to predict that Gausman could have an earned run average in the 2s, but what this is saying is that if he keeps pitching like he's been pitching, that's what we would expect. So the runs coming in were kind of a noisy result, but all the strikeouts and the lack of walks indicate that better things are ahead. So that's exciting. So it was an encouraging start despite the fact that he did give up 3 earned runs in the 4 1/3. I'll be interested to see what he can do next time. Although that start might come against the Rockies in Coors Field. So could be a tough place to go try to bring your earned run average down. So Caleb Berger then came in. I believe it was his second outing of the year. didn't go as well as the first. He ends up giving up 2 earned runs on a homer in an inning and 2/3, 3 hits, 2 strikeouts. Sam Coonrod pitched an inning. Wandy Peralta had a really nice inning. Tyler Rogers pitched a clean 9th inning. I think Tyler Rogers is a big story in this game. He got 2 strikeouts and a flyout in the 9th. So he's looking good in the 9th. Giants can't push across a run in the bottom of the 9th. So it goes to the top of the 10th with the new extra inning rule. Runner on second to start the top of the 10th for the Padres. So Manny Machado is up first. Tyler Rogers goes back out there for a 2nd inning. I understand that with 2 righties, Machado and Pham coming up first. The inning that he had in the 9th, I think it's a totally reasonable thing to do to have him go back out there. But with his first batter, he just clearly didn't have his best command. Although in a 3-1 pitch to Machado, looked like a clear and obvious strike at the top of the zone. Not even at the very top, but upper part of the zone, and it was somehow called ball 4. So a tough break there, and then boom, Tommy Pham hits a ground ball single that scores the runner from second, and suddenly it's first and second, no outs. So then Rogers doesn't have his command again, and he falls behind Jurickson Profar 3-1, and then hits him with a pitch. So he's behind in the count, and then he hits him. So clearly he doesn't have his command. And to me, that was the time when it was time to take Tyler Rogers out. But he ends up facing 3 additional batters, but Kapler only wanted him to face 2 more. So Greg Garcia pinch hits for Will Myers, platoon scenario there, by the way, and he hits a single to right, scores 2 runs. So it's 9-6, definitely time to take Rogers out by this point, but he gets to somehow face another batter. Ty France, who hits a single to center field that scores another run. It's 10-6. So I'm going to explain what happened. The Giants had Trevor Gott warming up in the earlier part of the inning. Presumably they were going to bring in Gott if a dicey situation came up and it was still close. But then what happened was the damage happened so quickly and the Giants fell behind so significantly that Kapler and the Giants decided to not waste Trevor Gott in a game that was out of hand. And they wanted to get up Rico Garcia instead. So they warm up Rico Garcia, but he didn't have enough time to really warm up. And so by the time all of these hits had happened, they finally send the pitching coach out to the mound to stall for time to get Rico Garcia ready. He had been warming up, but just to make sure he was fully warm. So then after the visit to the mound by Bailey, the pitching coach, Kapler comes out to bring in Rico Garcia. And, you know, it goes to commercial break and everything, and then it comes back, and then Tyler Rogers is still in the game. And that is because if the pitching coach makes a visit, or any coach, the pitcher must stay in and face another batter. So Kapler was not allowed to remove Rogers at that point in time. So they make Rogers face another batter. Austin Hedges hits a sacrifice bunt. A run scores. They don't get an out on the play. It becomes 11-6. It was already 10-6. Now it's 11-6. They make the pitching change. You know, another run comes in to score despite Rico Garcia being on the mound. They finally get out of the inning 12-6. So to me, honestly, I've been watching baseball obsessively for 20 years, and I wasn't totally clear on that rule. So I don't really care that Kapler did that. It's a good thing it didn't happen in a key situation, because by that point it was 10-6 with 2 guys on base. It really was inconsequential to the outcome of the game that Rogers had to face one more hitter. The bigger question was, why didn't they take Rogers out earlier, like 3 batters earlier? But there's always going to be things that you question. No manager is perfect, and there's always going to be reasons to criticize. But the mistake of coming out for the second mound visit and not being allowed to take out the pitcher, to me, that is just not a big deal. But yet, there have been a lot of articles written today about how this is a huge deal and it permanently ruins his reputation in the game. It's just like unbelievable, out of control hyperbole, in my opinion. There are comparisons to Bochy and that time that he caught Don Mattingly on a double mound visit. But actually, the more that I think about it, I'm trying to remember. I think that it was later determined that they made the umpires made the wrong call on that, and that Mattingly making a double mound visit, why should the pitcher have had to come out of the game in that game in LA? The idea was two mound visits, or after one mound visit, you can't take out the pitcher. And also, you know, we're acting like Bochy was infallible. But if memory serves, one time he made a mistake where there was an issue with the lineup and the Giants batted out of order, and it actually took a run off the board in the first inning of a game. And so, I mean, my goodness, imagine if Kapler took a run off the board. I'm afraid of what the reaction would be to something like that. So we need to keep perspective here. It kind of seems like we're looking for reasons to criticize Kapler. It's only if you had a preconceived notion about what Kapler is that you're really going to overreact to this. Just from a strictly strategic standpoint and from a macro standpoint of how this really matters, it's a small thing. So, you know, they'll move on. He's going to continue to be the manager, and I think he's done a pretty darn good job so far, actually. He's adapted when certain hitters were not doing well. He's kind of adapted and made some changes in the lineup that I thought were really appropriate, including going against some platoons. So he'll move on, and I don't think this one small moment that didn't affect the outcome of the game will define him. And if it does for anybody, then I think they're choosing to let that happen instead of just letting him do his job. He's only on his third year in the job. There's going to be some bumps in the road. It's a good thing it didn't happen in a big spot. And I'm pretty sure that'll never happen again from him. So what's the big deal? To me, people need to just calm down about this. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Remember, to get this show every weekday, you need to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. Once again, my name is Ben Kaspic. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Kaspic. That's K-A-S-P-I-C-K. We'll be back with another episode on Monday talking about this three-game series against the Rangers over the weekend. Calling it now, I think there's a possibility that Joey Bart could be called up either today or at some point during this series. Giants face two lefties, so we'll get a look at that righty lineup again. And that's the one that has had a lot of success. Anyway, thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you on Monday.